The dog days may be over, but the Midwestern Nerds are back. Welcome, everyone, back to the Midwestern Nerds. If you want to hear all our social medias and you want to know where you can listen to the podcast, wait till the end of the episode. We go over that then. This is part two of our Guardians of the Galaxy review. Full spoilers ahead, obviously. And also, if you haven't heard part one, you should probably go back and listen to last week's episode. Me and Brian talk about this movie a lot. That's why this is a part two. So, without further ado, enjoy.
So, really, we only have a few people left. Let's talk about the High Evolutionary, and then we'll talk about Gamora, then Star-Lord, then Rocket. Am I forgetting it? Groot, we don't really need to.
Groot, we can just say now, like, I loved Groot in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I heard somebody today say that, like, he was Chewy to Star-Lord Han, and I was like, yeah, that's perfect.
He absolutely was. I absolutely love the... I have it in my notes here somewhere. I love the multifunction of his big body, right? It's not just that he's big and, like, he's a powerhouse, almost like
Drax.
It's like he can grow, which you can't do that in an instant. That's him taking the resources from the rest of his body. He's almost more hollow when he does that big, like, the Kaiju Groot. But he can also fucking hide weapons in there, and they're not going to scan him because he's a fucking tree. And, like, so good.
I was disappointed that they gave that shot away in the trailer, but that being said, I also, like, kind of forgot about it until it started happening. And then I was like, oh, I've seen this before. But until then, I was like, oh, he's got to have, like, something hidden inside of him. And then it's sure as shit when Star-Lord's like, kill them all. And then he's just, and I want to talk about, too, something that, like, I didn't think about until today, again, when other people, like, have more profound thoughts than I do and share them on a podcast, and they make money on their podcast, and we don't because they share these kinds of thoughts and ideas. One of the podcasts I was listening to, it was with these two guys that talk about Marvel movies. One of them didn't like the fact that Groot at the end says, I love you guys. And then the other guy, hang on, just
I know.
Before you throw tables.
I'll still throw a table for that guy. Fuck that.
But the way that the other guy explained it, I was like, it was something that makes complete sense and is probably what James Gunn was going for, but, like, didn't click with me until he said it. And I was like, oh, that's perfect. And that makes complete sense.
Same.
So, first of all, he's like, well, A, it's a callback to Guardians 1 with the We Are Groot, which that obviously I did pick up on, and that's why I liked it. But B, he was talking about how throughout the movie when Gamora is forced to join the group, and she's just like, are you guys just, like, making up what you think that he's saying? Like, do you really understand what he's saying? And at some point towards the end of the movie, like, he says, I'm Groot, and then, like, she gets it. And then he said, from that point on, everybody in that family, including the audience, now understands Groot. And so when he said, I love you guys, he probably said, I am Groot, but now we are in on the translation and we know what he was saying in that moment. And I was like, ooh, that's deep. And I love that train of thought.
Yes. So similar to you, first time viewing, he says, I love you guys. And I literally, I was like, what? Why is he talking? I was almost, like, upset.
I loved it. I was like, aw.
But I obviously, I'm sitting there watching the credits, so I'm fucking thinking about it. None of the Guardians react to him saying, I love you guys, because that's what they've been hearing this entire time. They told the story. I mean, obviously, they've told the story through the eight titles that they've been in as far as Guardians of the Galaxy. But they told the story throughout this one specifically with Gamora of you have to spend time with him and you have to bond with him to then understand what he is saying. And that was James Gunn at the end of this Guardians run saying this audience has bonded with Groot, especially this new Groot who we just got it at the end of Guardians 1. We've bonded with him. We've spent enough time with him. We now understand. So like if someone put it very well to me, like we heard and the Guardians heard, I love you guys. If there was some random person from nowhere walking outside and they heard it through the door, they would hear I am Groot as well. Like he's still saying I am Groot, but now we understand him. Yeah, I completely agree. I wish I would have realized that right away. I don't know if there's a better way to convey it. I'm not saying they should have changed how they did it. I just wish I would have picked up on it. I'm putting that on myself because it's such a good moment.
I mean, I didn't pick up on it for that reason either, but I in the moment with the first and only time I've seen this movie now, I loved that like he said it out loud because I was like I thought of Guardians 1 when it was we are Groot and it was like oh yes like yeah I love it. Hey,
you know what, that's even interpreted at that point where maybe we're starting to get close to that Groot at the end of the first movie and we started to understand we are Groot. Maybe he's actually saying we are a family or something like that and we only heard like a couple words. But then he died, so we have to relearn this new group. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, he was fun in this movie. He had a lot of great moments. Obviously, he looked like a fucking spider at one point, which was super cool. But
he had the wings also.
Yeah, the wings were so cool.
He's one of the characters that I was referring to with Josh in the draft of like at the time of the draft, it was like, huh, Groot, that's an interesting pick. And now it's like, huh, Groot, that's a pretty great pick, especially... Yeah. If it's Groot in that mid-credit scene where he's fucking big as a boulder.
Fucking like, mega Groot.
Like, he's fucking wise oak tree Groot, but also just, like, behemoth. And awesome. It's like, if he could do all the stuff that he did in this movie at the size that he was at, what the fuck can he do now that he's, like, a fucking boulder size? Wow. They're sitting on him, and I thought that was a boulder, like, the whole time until he gets up. And it's like, dude, that's Groot?
I honestly was like, where the fuck is Groot? I genuinely, they were all talking, where the fuck is Groot? Just want to see Groot. And then he gets up and he's fucking mega and it's awesome. Okay. Let's talk about the High Evolutionary, which I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent, not a tangent, but a rant here because his character is so fucking good. I just want to go into a bunch of details. If you want to interrupt me, that's fine. But I want to dive into everything that I had because I took many notes.
I'll just jump in right away then first before you go off on your tangent and say that he's one of the best villains in the MCU so far because while I understand his motives and his motivations and where his head's at the same time, I fucking hate his guts. And I was with Drax when he was like, kill him. Like, why don't you kill him?
Yeah.
At the end, I was like, fuck yeah, put a bullet in his head. When we're full spoilers, so I don't feel bad saying this.
Oh, yeah.
One of the last flashback scenes when he escapes the ship, and he claws the fuck out of his face. He's got the gun. I was like, shoot him right here. Like, just fucking end him.
Honestly, one of the best scenes in the MCU. I don't even care.
And he just leaves him. And I was like, are you like, I kind of wish that they would have had him being shot at. And that's the reason that he didn't kill the High Evolutionary and that he left right away. Cause like he's fucking standing there after he claws his face up. And then we cut to him running to the ship. And it's like, why didn't you kill him? He's right there.
Isn't that when he gets shot at? Yeah, because he picks up the gun and then he shoots the two people, but then he realizes the two people.
He shoots like the three people and then he like kind of looks at the High Evolutionary.
But that's when he looks back and realizes that Florentief's also got shot.
Yeah, and then that's when you put a bullet in his head.
That's when he starts running though, because I think more people, I don't know.
He had more than enough time where he wasn't being shot at, where you see your friends, you turn around, you put a bullet in that guy's head.
Well, sure, but don't you think he thought that he was dead?
Dude. Double
tap.
He
wasn't moving.
Double tap. Always be sure. Double tap.
Overkill is better than underkill.
Exactly.
Because I loved the touch in that scene, and we're going to talk about that scene more.
It's later. One of the things that I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you one more time. It's one of the things that I love about John Wick the most in his movies is that he'll shoot a dude in the face like 8 times. He knows he's dead after that first shot, but just to be sure, I'm gonna put 4 more bullets in his head.
Like, how many times is he out of bullets?
Just end that guy. I've gone through enough of that kind of loss where, like, if I'm in his shoes, fucking end him. One of my favorite parts, and this is, I know I'm going off on so many tangents here. One of my favorite parts about Guardians 2 is after Ego tells Star-Lord, yeah, I put cancer in your mom and that killed her. He does not hesitate and he fucking shoots him like 8 times. That is the appropriate response. Kill that motherfucker. I'm sorry. That was one of the little nitpicks that I had where I was like, I get why you didn't, because we don't have this movie then. But in that moment, shoot that motherfucker. I don't care. I don't care if 50 people are shooting at you. If you're going to die, fucking take him with you.
out of everything in this movie, I did not think that was going to be the thing you were heated about the most. I didn't even think that was an issue. I have no issue with that scene.
No,
that scene
is kill perfect. That motherfucker. No. That scene is perfect other than the fact that he let him live. Kill that motherfucker. And I get to why, again, he didn't shoot him the second time because, he's fucking... If he comes back somehow after that ship explodes, I'll have an issue then. But at this point in time, it's like, no, he blew up with that ship. He's fucking done.
We'll talk about that later.
Unless Groot can get that third chance. Or not Groot, Rocket. Unless Rocket can get that third chance, fucking... He better be dead or I'm going to be mad. Madder.
I have a theory. We'll get to it. So, to rebuttal on that scene, apparently, in Rocket's defense, he scratches them up, right? And then the two guards come and he shoots, boom, boom. The High Evolutionary does not move except for after the scratching on the face, except for one slight twitch in the foot, but that is when Rocket is facing the other way. So in our perspective, of Rocket's perspective, the High Evolutionary is dead. It's safe to assume, I think Rocket is young enough in his life. He's smart, but he's ignorant in some part. He thinks this man is dead. Right?
You brought up the point that he's young, which that I'll give you that. But me being a little bit older, I know you double tap that guy. You make sure that he's done.
These are lessons that we all have to learn. You double tap. Anyway, so High Evolutionary. I love the character. And these are all obvious things, but I just want to talk about them because they're so just perfect in his character and his motivation. His main goal is to build the perfect society. But he himself is never perfect. Rocket, the reason that he hates Rocket so much is because Rocket figures something out that he never could. And that creates the creation surpassing the creator is what just absolutely flips that switch in Herbert Wyndham's head. It's just such an ego driven, because I'm not a parent, probably never will be. We'll see. I don't know. But from what I've heard is like the moment that your goal as a parent is to raise your kids to be better than you, right? Like that's almost like one of the main goals is to make people better, right? So like as this God character, which he calls himself later in the movie, he says that God doesn't exist. That's why I stepped in. What a fucking line that was. He can't stand the fact that he's creating creatures that can outthink him. A, because that probably scares him in some capacity, but B, because he's striving for perfection. He probably holds himself to those standards. There's a throwaway line at one point, but he does experiments on himself. He does testing, and he like the reason when he comes crashing in after they have that breakthrough of the creatures actually not being violent anymore, and he comes tumbling in and he takes Rocket out of the cage, there's that throwaway line of like, oh, he left his testing early or something like that. Like, he was clearly in the middle of some sort of procedure to upgrade himself. He even realizes that he himself is not perfect, so he's trying to, that's why he has these weird powers towards the end, and why his face is fucking covered up. Obviously his face is gonna be covered up, but he's covering up those imperfections.
Which that was one of those other, like, this should be a rated R moment.
I did not
the first fact of all, that they peel his face off and how gnarly it and detailed it is.
Yeah.
Like, you can see his eyes.
Yeah, and it's not something I thought, like, even after the scratch scene, we saw in the trailers his face stretched out, like the current Herbert Windom, right? But it never in my mind did I think that he had scars or something that he was hiding up. I just thought he made so many technological advances to himself that he had to, like, most of his head was machine, yep. So he put his face over it or something. I never at one point thought that he had a silicone face to cover up the imperfections. It's just the simple story of imperfection together and love versus perfection alone. Like, just, and that throughout the whole movie, and I watched the second time with that, you know, just watching with that in mind, and the whole movie is just so good.
We even get to see the moment where it snaps and he, like, changes. And that's when Rocket figures that out, because, like, he is, like, they do show him for a little bit that's, like, kind and nurturing and, like, trying to help these creatures, like, further develop, because at one point his goal probably was for good intentions. It didn't get twisted into the horrific events that it eventually turns into. And you see that moment where, yeah, then he completely snaps, and then you see him further and further unhinged throughout this movie, like, the more it goes. He is such a well-written character. He was, and I don't know the actor's name, but he was so well acted. That actor did such a good job with this character.
I know his name, I just don't want to get it wrong.
And they did such a good job of just making you hate this guy on so many different levels. Like, not only is he just a monster that's creating monsters, and then when he does create good things, he's like, "Eh, it's not good enough," and we see the complete genocide of a planet, which we quickly move over to get to the end of the movie. It's like, whoa, hey, like,
I can't believe they showed it though. There was, like, clear shots of Gamora, like, looking people in their eye, just fucking exploding.
Yeah, and, like,
whoa.
But put all that stuff aside. Even when fucking Star-Lord and Groot go to meet with him, and he's just the whole time with his finger up, like, doing his little thing. It's like, fuck you,
yeah.
you arrogant piece of shit. Like, even Star-Lord was like, I forget what he says to him, but it's just like, yeah, fuck this guy.
It's so good. Chuck Wudiawuji is his name. I knew Chuck Woody. I couldn't remember his last name. He was the guy in Peacemaker as well. So James Gunn worked with him.
Yes. He was phenomenal in this movie. Like, I think if you could give, like, an Oscar to anybody in this movie, like, I would give him supporting actor, because I thought that he was that good.
Honestly, like, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Like, I hated him, but for all the right reasons, and it's because of not just the way he was written, but the way that it was portrayed and the way it was acted. Like, yeah, High Evolutionary is, for me, like, top MCU villains. Like, he's in the top five.
He's up there with Killmonger for me, for sure.
I would put him above Killmonger.
I might, honestly, yeah. Like, yeah, if we did an actual ranking, there's a good chance I would. I again, just a few details. He's not human, So I don't know what he actually is, because he mentions that he visited. He's talking to Peter. He says, "I visited your planet a number of years ago." Yep. So it's like he's clearly not from there. Who knows what he actually is? I don't think it really matters.
He made the comment about the music too,
dude.
Which,
yes,
which I was like, "Oh, okay." Like you're trying, you're maybe trying to get on Peter's side here. Like,
it's I love that there's always a natural draw to Earth and their culture, which I mean maybe is just placating to us because we live here, you know, like as far as people writing the movies. But I like it as a common theme in the MCU where, like, yeah, he has recordings of like music from 5,000 years ago. Is that what he said? I can't remember. Like it was that, some super old thing. He knows the translation of it, but he likes it. And his line was, "It is up to us to take the sounds around us and make music." Which I think is, in that in itself is a cool line. The music that the family is listening to on Counter Earth when they go into the house, it's an actual genre of music. I don't know what it's fucking called, but it is, I think it's on the playlist here. Yeah, let's see here. Minute Waltz. I can't even, like, it's an actual genre of music where it's just like a bunch of fucking sounds put together. But it's like there's like this small cult following. And so James Gunn actually just grabbed a song from that genre and made it part of this Earth because it is literally taking sounds from life and putting them together to make music. I that was just this really cool detail that I loved.
Speaking of Counter Earth, I know they showed a little bit of it in the trailers, but I really loved the couch gag with Drax.
So good.
Like the whole thing about him being like, "That's what it's here for."
That whole scene is just so funny with I mean
the callback to Infinity War, where he's moving slowly to lay down and Peter's like, "I see you.
I see you." The Nebula pours the drink and she goes, "This is fucking great." Like she's just automatically in love with this drink. Peter draws the guy that they're looking for and all of them are like, "Holy shit, that's really good. Can I have that for my apartment?"
I was expecting a little more out of it, but at the same time, like, I loved the F-bomb.
Dude,
reason behind it.
It's so good. Yeah, the reason behind it is awesome, but just the fact that it's the first and only F-bomb in the MCU so far, and it's something so casual. It's not like a big moment or anything. It's literally open the fucking door.
It was almost subtle too, like the way that he said it. Like he didn't like yell. He's just like, "Open the fucking door." Where like,
yeah,
at times you forget that this is a PG-13 movie because of some of the examples that we've already given. But that was one of those moments where like he said it and I laughed. And then as they're driving away, I was like, "Oh yeah, this is a PG-13 movie. Oh yeah, they made a big deal about this being the first F-bomb. Oh yeah, that's the first F-bomb." Like,
so good.
It didn't click with me at first. I was just like, "Oh, that's funny." And I was like, "Oh, wait a minute."
I love it so much. Yeah, and the they're playing fucking charades too, trying to talk to these people after these people clearly understand English too. Like that's
and the fact too that he understood the kids. I would bet that Drax understood all of those people the whole time. And he was just like, "I just want to fucking lay on this couch."
Oh yeah. 100%. Also the small detail that Counter Earth, obviously, Herbert Wyndham, when he visited Earth, must have been around late '70s, early '80s, because that's kind of the style of the homes, the cars, the you know, everything. Which is just a really cool detail of in Peter's story, because Peter has been avoiding going home and going back to Earth so long, but now he goes to this planet that looks exactly like the planet that he left 20 some years ago, like that he left in the '80s. So it's just,
and I thought it was funny too, that like, how many vehicles have we seen him drive perfectly? And the fact that he's like, "I've never driven a fucking car," and he's just so bad at it. And it's like, dude, you can fly and drive almost anything, and then you get into a normal Earth car and you can't drive.
So funny. Herbert Wyndham is he's already planning a new colony of people while this one is going to shit. Like I've seen some people go like, "Oh, he turned on this planet really fucking quick when Peter just said that someone was dealing drugs." It's like, no. I think he knew that this planet was going to shit. He's already building a new planet with these people who survive on 30 calories a day, only 2 hours of sleep, blah, blah. He's already got a backup plan. He's already got bombs planted in the fucking ground of this. It's not like he just had those as a failsafe. Maybe he did. But he clearly knew that this was going to happen. He knew that this was a good way to bring in P9813. He knew that this, because Counter Earth was always the place that Rocket wanted to go. So I think that's why he kept it for so long, was drawing Rocket back. So that's why he gave up on it, because now they knew he had him. I love that his bodyguards are abominations of fucking, like, they're not perfect at all, but they are for his protection. So they are just big machines and big animals. War Pig, love that. I think that's all I had on Herbert Wyndham. I love that there's a mutiny at one point, but he survives it because he just fucking destroys everything. He doesn't care about anything except for Rocket's brain at this point. And that is his ultimate downfall, obviously. Like, he obviously has the power and the army, and he could take over whatever the fuck he wants, but he's so obsessed with Rocket and Rocket surpassing him that that's what his ultimate failure is. It's just so good. I love everything about it. He is, like you said, easily one of my new MCU favorites. Let's talk Gamora and then Star-Lord Rocket. Gamora doesn't have too much that I want to talk about. I specifically want to, because I think I was on this podcast when I mentioned, you know, leading up to the holiday special and all that stuff, I've always wanted Star-Lord and Gamora to get back together, because obviously we had that taken away from us. But I fucking love what they did with her in this movie. I'm so glad. I wish I would have had this realization on the podcast or before we recorded or something, but like, I don't know what came over me, like, days before I saw the third movie, I all of a sudden was like, no, they can't get back together. Like, and then I was like, oh my God, if they get back together in this movie, I'm going to be so mad. Like, I all of a sudden changed my mind on that. I have no idea what happened, but they did it so well in this movie where Peter has a line where he said, you know, this isn't you. You've always been looking for a family. You're not going to have that family with the Ravagers. You have to find that family with us. But she has that family with the Ravagers. That fucking scene where she's back with them and they're all so excited to see her and they're hugging her and she's back with it. I honestly was.
She's just fucking hooking up with Stallone now.
You think they're hooking up?
The Wild Stallion or whatever he was called in his porno movie.
I don't know if they're hooking up, but sure.
I don't know. Like, I could maybe see it.
I think they're just, I think she found a family, much like the past Gamora found this family in the Guardians. Just a really good moment.
My headcanon is Stallone's the new Star-Lord for her.
Sure. Why not? But other than that, it was good because they told the story the exact way that I started thinking about it. This is a brand new person, and having, I'm sure that this was a trope in another movie and I just can never remember what it is. I've been trying to think about it for like a week now, where someone's memory is wiped and their significant other keeps trying to tell them like, hey, we're supposed to be in love. We're a couple, blah, blah, blah. It might be a Family Guy thing. Oh my God, it is. Doesn't Lois lose her memory at one point and she ends up with Quagmire, I think. Anyway, sorry.
I think so, but I know
it's in a movie too.
I feel like this has happened recently in something.
It's a trope that I've been trying to put my finger on, but it's good because as the person who doesn't have those memories, you can't just tell me that I'm supposed to be in love with you. Like that's not how this works. So looking at it from Gamora's side, it's like, yeah, fuck off, Star-Lord. Like, quit it. I'm not going to be this person just because you need me to be. And I think they did it so well. The scenes with those two were so good. They still ended up building a relationship, but it's now a platonic relationship where I'm sure if Zoe Saldana ever returns, which it sounds like she won't, they would work together potentially. So I was very pleased with how they handled it.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame that she's publicly said multiple times now in marketing this movie that like this is it and she's done.
Yeah.
Because her character still is an interesting paradox in the MCU right now, where like I guess you can hand wave it and forgive it in saying that, like, she's just filling the role that her previous dead self did. But if she was meant to die in that moment, then this Gamora being here would still be a paradox. And, like, I feel like that's something that you could have touched on with the TVA at some in some way, shape, or form at some point. But the fact that, like, she's probably not going to be around, like, I don't know how they're going to do that, which, again, I'll just keep dancing around the end conversation we're going
to
have.
We'll get to it soon.
Because there's so many questions, variables, just everything, where it's just like, we'll get to it. But yeah, well, I don't have too much to say either, other than the fact that, like, I agree. I love the arc and the journey that we got with her, and I love that she showed that she was a rough and tough kind of Ravager girl at the start of this movie, and got touched by this family of Guardians, and will probably be affected in that way now going forward, where, yeah, she'll still probably be rougher and tougher than the Gamora that we used to know, but if by some chance of fate, like, Zoe Saldana comes back with this character, or this character does come back, because she also said, like, I hope they recast me, because I would like to see this character continue on. I'm just done, which I get. One of the things that she's talked about as an actress a lot lately is, while she's grateful for all of the opportunities that she's had in the big movies that she's been in, like the fucking biggest movies in the world being not just Avengers, Infinity War, and Endgame, but also the two Avatar movies. Like, she's a main character in, like, the top four all-time movies of all time, as far as box office goes. Like,
fucking awesome.
That's huge. And she's talked about how she's grateful for those opportunities, but she's been shoehorned now into franchises and franchise movies and doing franchise roles, and how she's expressed that, like, yeah, you still have room to grow and just advance as an actor in those roles. She still hasn't been given the opportunity to do, like, something different, something new. Like she hasn't been able to stretch out in like a really great TV show or an indie movie or just like a smaller type role, because she's never had time, because she's either doing Marvel movies or she's doing Avatar movies.
Yeah.
And so I understand it from her point of view of, this is why I'm done. But
sure.
At the same time, like, there's still so many questions and variables and possibilities with this character that, yeah, if she's not coming back, I hope that they do recast, and that they do what Marvel does and does a phenomenal job at recasting, where, yeah, you can tell it's not Zoe Saldana, but whoever they choose has the qualities of Gamora that it's like, oh yeah, that's same character, different actor.
It just happened before, it can happen again. Yeah, she ends up saving, you know, Rocket several times. She ends up understanding Groot. Like, she still bonds with them, but that's not her main family anymore. And I just, you know, just cool stuff. Let's talk about Star-Lord. Holy crap. Him overcoming alcohol abuse at the beginning, and then, like, he's still the one leading this, but he's also not the leader anymore. Like, Nebula's the one taking care of people. Rocket's been the secret captain this whole time, the secret main character. Like, Star-Lord now has to go find himself towards the end of this movie. We'll talk about that. I genuinely believed that he was dead. when they had that scene, I started bawling, because I was, holy shit, they're killing Star-Lord. Like, there was no doubt in my mind that they were killing off this character. But then there was a really great moment that actually, like, I'm not even mad that they saved him from near death, because it was like a really good redemption moment for Adam, who after Groot saved Adam, Adam then returned the favor because Groot told him, everyone deserves a second chance. So Adam goes and saves with a little, like, what's the, I don't know what the painting is, but the touch of God, whatever, they kind of recreated that. And yeah, he saved Star-Lord. Just cool. I don't know, not much else as far as his arc, other than realizing that he needs to go home. You know what I mean? Like, he has been running away this whole time. Now he needs to go settle down and go see his family.
I liked Star-Lord in this movie, and I kind of hearing some behind the scenes stuff in interviews with James Gunn of, like, yeah, he wrote the dialogue for the Guardians in Infinity War and Endgame, but at the same time, he's like, I don't like how they treated Star-Lord in Infinity War with that moment. And he's like, that's not the character that, like, I've developed in these movies. Like, he wouldn't have reacted in that way. And I like that it could have been a throwaway line, but they do address it. Like, and it kind of redeems it a little bit, but I liked seeing, like, the regular Star-Lord again. Like, not just a bumbling idiot, kind of a joke. Like, I liked the way he was portrayed in this movie. I liked that we see moments of Rocket in Star-Lord, and we see moments of Star-Lord in Rocket. And I like that kind of solidifies Star-Lord saying that Rocket's his best friend. But that's, like, the only way it does. Like, that was one of my tiny nitpicks about the movie. But I'll get into it in a little bit. But, like, I liked during the heist scene of him, like, doing all the mechanical stuff and, like, kind of thinking and having a plan that is similar to a plan that Rocket would probably cook up. And I like the fact that Rocket is now loving music and is obsessed with the Zune and all that stuff. And it shows that both of these two are kind of rubbing off on each other, where when he's like, that's my best friend, they're showing it in those ways that yes, they're best friends. But there hasn't been a moment, there hasn't really been a whole lot of time leading up to Volume 3 that would make me say, oh yeah, those two are best friends. Like, with Drax, like, with his little joke in there of second best friend, like, him meaning like, oh yeah, I'm your first best friend. That's more believable because we've had more one-on-one time with Star-Lord and Drax where they're kind of bonding together than we have with Rocket, because the whole arc, one of the whole arcs of Volume 2 was the fact that, like, the two were at odds with each other and constantly butting heads. And yeah, they come together at the end, but we don't get a moment of them, like, being friends together. You know, like, you can tell me until you're blue in the face, yeah, we're best friends, but, like, show me at some point a moment where I'm like, okay, I get it. Other than, like, individual moments where it's like, yeah, I see a little bit of Rocket and Star-Lord, but show me moments of them together. Like, it's a lot of nitpicky moments that kind of make a big, like, gripe that I have with this movie, is that we've seen characters of this team interact together in outside projects outside of Guardians 1 and 2 that I wish could have had a moment or more time together in this movie. Like, the fact that Nebula and Rocket are the only two that don't get dusted away, and the development that we see of them in Endgame and even at the end of the holiday special and in this movie. Granted, Rocket's in a coma, like, the majority of the time, but, like, there's not a moment of those two together. Like, when Nebula breaks down when she hears him talking after he's alive, like, that got me. But at the same time, I was like, we don't even get a goodbye moment of those two together. You know what I mean? Like, it could have been as quick as, like, some of, like, the montage-y moments at the end of the holiday special of, like, them giving gifts to each other, of, like, a goodbye moment during the song where, like, or an interaction of them dancing together during the song or something, where it was just like, we've seen connections with certain characters outside of these movies that I wanted just a touch of more in this movie, that this movie, like, almost acted like they didn't happen before. If that makes sense. Like, that was one of the big ones where it was like, Nebula and Rocket should be the ones where it's like, we're best friends. Like, if that would have been Nebula being like, we're best friends, I would have been like, oh yeah, I fucking know that, cause I've seen it. But like, Star-Lord is like, he's my best friend. And it's like, when have we seen that? Like, yeah, you guys made up at the end of volume 2, but otherwise you're still like ribbing each other all the way through Infinity War. And even in Thor Love and Thunder, like, we haven't got
rib your friends all the time though.
Yeah, but at the same time, I also have like heart-to-heart moments with my friends too. That's like, oh yeah, I get Guardians too. Yes and no.
Yes and no.
I want a little bit more. You could have. This movie's already over 2 hours long. Just give me give me 5 seconds. Come on. Like I said, we danced in the montage at the end. Like, fucking. Yeah, we can dance, but also like have fucking Nebula and Rocket like hug at the end. Have Mantis and Star-Lord hug at the end. Like, yeah, we're having fun and it's great, but also we're going our separate ways. Like, at least other than the moment of Groot being like, I love you guys, and them all being like mopey, like, say goodbye.
But, like, okay. I agree that those relationships are important, but the relationships that they do focus on, I think, are the ones that are most important between Drax and Mantis, Rocket and Groot, who are, you know, they've been together literally since the beginning of this story. Nebula and Gamora had their, I mean, it's a small moment, but they had a lot of moments in this. And then, I mean, Peter's just leaving. Like, Peter has his moments with everyone, I think. So, I don't know.
I've only seen it the once, but this is how I feel with that one-time viewing, where I was like, oh, I saw development between certain characters that haven't really had that one-on-one time in the Guardians movies themselves, but have in, like, Avengers and all that stuff. Like, I get it. Those aren't the Guardians movies, but they still happened in the MCU. Like, acknowledge it. Like,
I will also say Peter and Mantis at least have that little moment where Peter says, I need to learn how to swim. And he looks at her because he knows that she's the one that actually said that. I don't know. Nebula, because Rocket turns to Nebula and says, hey, oh, so you're going to be the one leading the Guardians. She's like, no, I'm going to stay here and run nowhere. You're the clear leader. We still need the Guardians of the Galaxy. So, I understand where you're coming from. I had zero issue with the ending of this. Oh, I don't agree with anything you just said. Just kidding.
Which we'll get into more of that. Yes. But that was me touching that iceberg.
Sure.
in the Star-Lord conversation. But yeah, otherwise, I liked Star-Lord. You brought it up too, and I'll say I understood the importance of the moment for Adam Warlock saving him. I wish that it would have been done differently. Like,
okay.
when you thought that Star-Lord was dead, I thought that Star-Lord was dead too, because I think that was the most James Gunniest moment that I was like, ugh, I don't like that.
Really? And,
like, that completely took me out of the movie, because I was like, when your head's puffing to the point where it's about to pop like a pimple and you're out there in space for that long, you're like, you're dead. And the fact that, like, they immediately followed it up with the joke and the whole, like, like Sistine Chapel, like finger touching David thing. I was like,
I wouldn't call that a joke.
That moment was a joke. I was like, come on, no. And and then the fact where like he's talking for a little bit and he's still like all deformed and all that shit. And
I don't know why his face, why was his face deformed? That didn't happen to Yondu or Gamora when that was happening in the first two movies.
Again, it was like, when I say a James Gunn moment, it was like, okay, like I liked that Adam Warlock saved Star-Lord for his arc.
Sure.
But the fact that you've been teasing like the deaths so heavily in this movie up to that point, and then that was like, that was kind of that moment where I was like, all right, now you've stepped over that line. Like, if you're not going to do it, like, don't go as ridiculous as that. And then he answered this question on Twitter when people are like, where was his mask and his rocket boots? Like,
what was his answer? Cause I haven't heard this yet.
And he's like, oh, he left it in his desk and nowhere. They had to leave in a quick hurry to save Rocket, which
You gotta just have a line. I don't have my mask. Too bad. We need to go.
Right. Cause I call bullshit too, because we've seen that moment twice now in the movies where, yeah, he's put the mask on and he's had the rocket boots on and he's fine in space. And I was like, where's the mask?
Like, that was my biggest issue with this scene. That was literally my biggest issue with this whole movie, was where was his mask?
And then
not explain it once.
And your excuse is he left it in his desk on nowhere.
Again, I can buy if you just reference that early in the movie.
But and I can understand that excuse, but it's an excuse because you can't tell me that he doesn't have multiple of those. And he doesn't have a set. He doesn't have a set on the Bowie.
Or a way to make a new one on the Bowie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it was a lazy way to get to that scene.
That's why I did not like that scene. Like, that was my least favorite part of the whole movie, was him floating in space, and I was like, oh, he's dead. And then it's like, no, he's not dead. And here's a joke with the famous painting, with him and Emma Warlock, and now he's safe on the ship. And I was like, really? And we're gonna have like two more jokes of him like talking with his face all fucked up, and then the very next scene his face is back to normal, just perfectly fine. Yeah, but like there's not even a little bit of the magic med pack. Yeah,
yes. They established the med pack.
Adam
Warlock even used a med pack in the beginning of the movie.
I did not like that.
Fair enough.
One more quick tangent, since you said Adam Warlock, it sparked a memory in my brain. When he first attacks Nowhere and Kraglin shoots the arrow at him and it like fucking like and like hits him in the face, I loved his response of like, just look around and who threw that at me? Like, the way that he said it and delivered that line, I was like, I died laughing.
Adam Warlock had so many good scenes in that movie. Okay. We are going way too long in this, but we need to.
Hey, it's your favorite. Rocket. It's your favorite franchise.
So. I agree. I don't hate that we're going this long, but we haven't even talked about Rocket yet. I mean, we have, but we need to dive into his story and what happened in this movie and what happened in the three movies, because as James Gunn has kind of hinted at in interviews in the past, Rocket has always been the secret protagonist of these movies. And there's even the line that Lively gives him up in Purgatory, heaven, ? We'll find out. What has she said? I had it, now I lost it. It was your story all along, you just didn't know it. Which again, that feels like James Gunn talking to us too. It's like, this has always been Rocket's story, you guys just didn't know. I loved everything. Like, we finally got an answer to a lot of questions that were brought up early about Rocket. You mentioned his new obsession with music. I think it's a really good, because I've always wondered why he was at the beginning of Guardians 2 when he's setting up the music when they're about to fight the Obelisk. Like, he is setting up the music and he blames Quill for it, but like, I think he's secretly falling in love with the music right then and there. So I think that
Because when yeah. he's when he's fixing the ship too,
he's
before they go to Ego, he's got that magic gun that's like basically like using the paint tool mm-hmm. in Microsoft Paint of like just erasering the ship back together. Yeah. And as he's doing that, like the music's playing and he's tapping his foot and he's like humming and mumbling some of the words.
And he's singing Southern Nights when the Ravagers attack too. Like he is fully in love with
music. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's just such a good wraps everything together. I mean, there's just everything from finding out that he was just an experiment. He was never supposed to survive. The fucking scene where they try to escape is genuinely one of my new favorite MCU scenes, because I think a lot of us thought that Rocket and Lila had a potential to reunite towards the end of this movie, and that's where his story was going to take him. Come to find out, she didn't even fucking survive. She got shot as they were trying to run. So that's why Rocket attacks the High Evolutionary.
Dude, that then, spider bunny like is gonna live in my nightmares. That thing was fucking creepy. Nah,
Floor's adorable, dude.
Creepy.
Floor's it's such a perfect casting is the wrong word, but like it's the perfect selection for an animal, right? Where it's an albino rabbit, so like there's an inherent imperfection about it because it's albino and it has the red eyes, so it's almost like that horror thing. You have to cover up their mouth, but she talks through a voice box. She's got the like they make her horror, but they also make her like she's just this really innocent child who just wants to play, and it's such a cool character. Heath's the big walrus. He can't even fucking blink on his own. He has mechanical pistons to make his eyes blink. And apparently Rocket in the comics has his kind of accent, the one that they gave Teefs. So that's a nice little nod there. Lila, again, she's so cool. It's nice to have friends. She says that so many times, and then the final time she says it, she gets shot. I just can't get over that scene where Rocket sees his friends die and then he just runs away. It's just so emotional. It makes you feel for Rocket. Again, I mentioned Nebula saying that.
It makes me understand why he's angry all the time.
Yes. Because
he's so angry that he didn't kill the High Evolutionary. Let's be honest. His anger, I understand it now. He's like, fuck that guy. He killed my friends and I didn't fucking kill him too.
Back to that. No, he's always... He never wants to fully get close to people because the people he got closest to fucking died because he was trying to run away with them. He was trying to go live a happy life. So he thinks he doesn't deserve that happy life. He was only built for experiments. Like, it ties everything together. Again, this is the perfect, in my opinion, the perfect trilogy story. Like, you set up this character and you have him go through all this hardships. And then you explain why he went through all this shit and have him overcome it. Like, it's so good. I love that he originally they say, you know, go save the higher life forms. They go and save all the kids and all any other experiments that they have, including the weird little goopy guy voiced by James Gunn, where that man just got scared by. But then he realizes he finds the little cages where he was a little raccoon. That's when he finally realizes that he's a raccoon. He calls himself Rocket Raccoon. There's just so many cool moments with Rocket. It's so sad. He one of his dreams is to fly in the sky with his friends, and he gets that taken away from him, but then he finds new friends and he's able to do that with them. And oh, there's just so many cool things. Go ahead, go. Let me collect my thoughts. You go on Rocket for a sec here.
No, I loved his arc in this movie. His backstory was tragic. It's hard to watch at times. It's his floor friend still creeps the fuck out of me. But I liked Rocket before this movie, but like I really like / maybe almost love Rocket after this movie. And I'll show my hand now because it's over, but I was between Fastos and Rocket for my team. Wow. I was gonna draft Rocket as like my engineer science techie dude.
Wow.
And then I was like, I think Fastos is a safer option, so I went with that. And then after seeing this movie, I was like, fuck, I should have drafted Rocket as that role in that team. But yeah, I really liked him in this movie, and I'm glad that they didn't kill him off. And it makes sense that you would keep him around because he is one of the more popular Guardians characters. Now he's a leader type character, leading a Guardians team. You can continue the Guardians. You could do a volume 4 without James Gunn, or because there's only a handful of fully established characters on this team, I think you could do a Disney Plus Guardians of the Galaxy series.
Yes.
Now with this team,
just have going them on different little missions.
Have them do a 6-episode mission or 9 half-hour.
Yes, please.
Episode missions, mini missions, and it makes sense because you don't necessarily need Bradley Cooper to be Rocket. And they kind of proved that point in this movie in the fact that Baby Rocket was voiced by a completely different actor and Little Kid Rocket was voiced by Sean Gunn. So it wasn't even Bradley Cooper. Like, he only did adult Rocket. So you don't need Bradley Cooper back to voice Rocket. You can get a really good voice actor to continue playing that character. And I don't know why Bradley Cooper wouldn't want to keep doing this because he's directing his own movies and he's trying to like do prestige, like high end movies in Hollywood, but you know, do one for them so that you can then do more for yourself, getting those paychecks. He's just got to sit in a room for like a couple days and read off a couple lines. That's easy work for him.
That's the thing.
I don't know why.
Dave Bautista, where he has to stay in shape. You know,
yeah.
It's that you're literally voice acting. You could do this gig forever if you want to.
And I don't know why he wouldn't want to keep doing that.
I agree. I like, again, from the very beginning, they kind of set up that there's Herbert Windham has all of these different creations and he has all these different people, but the one thing that he can't replicate is that soul and that like that perfect, not perfect human being, but that like that actual humanity almost that is the one thing he can't replicate. And you see it in Rocket almost immediately when the hand is coming in to grab one of the new raccoons. All of them are running away except for Rocket. And so immediately they establish there's something special in Rocket. And then it gets wrapped up where, again, the perfect nature of Herbert Windham doesn't stand a chance when you have all these imperfections coming together and that they get to beat up Herbert. They rip his face off. We see that disgusting, disgusting scratched up face. And
I liked that. That's that final battle.
They all went back for Rocket.
Yeah. And I liked that we didn't need like a special like entrance moment for each character to like come and beat him up. Like it's Rocket and that guy, and all of a sudden like Drax is there, and then Nebula's there, and then Star-Lord's there, and Mantis is there. Like that they don't take like a special, they don't take the spotlight off of Rocket and the High Evolutionary. Those two characters are both like front and center of that entire battle, even with the other Guardians coming in, which that choreograph was phenomenal.
So great. Not to mention the hallway scene. Oh my God. To sit to the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, let's talk about that. We can't leave this discussion without talking about that.
Since we're already talking about the Herbert Windham fight, I just want to mention before they decide not to kill him, but then blow up his ship. So he's probably dead. Theory later. Rocket says, you didn't want to make everything perfect. You just hated the things the way they are. And then they said, shoot him. Rocket said, no, I'm a Guardian of the Galaxy. Like, and that again is like a moment where he himself is accepting that he is that captain leader figure too. So
I'm Rocket Raccoon.
Yes. Anyway, yes. Let's talk about that hallway scene.
That hallway scene was fucking awesome. Like, the only thing that I had heard about Guardians 3 going into it, like, I was trying very hard to avoid any, like, reviews, spoilers, or anything. The one thing that I heard was, oh my god, the Beastie Boys No Sleep Till Brooklyn scene might be one of the best MCU scenes yet. And I was like, what? And I was like, no fucking way. And I was like, what could that scene possibly be? And then we just get there and it's like, oh my god, like, this is for me like the first time that you show this team at its full potential. Because even during our draft, Chad made the offhand comment afterwards that, like, I never thought of recruiting a Guardian of the Galaxy because I never thought that they had the potential to be better than any of the other choices that I had before that. And then this scene showed that, like, no, if you put all these people together at their prime, they're gonna wreck shop. And holy crap, like, everybody had like a moment to shine in that fight as the camera is continually moving and you see just them at their full potential. You see them using their special skills and abilities to the max. Even Nebula getting her head fucking like hit off to the point where it's like that would kill anybody, and she fucking swings it around and like hits other people with it as she's still doing her thing. And it's just like, that scene was badass. Like, I would definitely put it in like a top fight scene MCU. I don't know where on that list that would go, because there's been a lot of great fucking fights in the MCU, but like that scene was like, oh, that was awesome.
I know a lot of people have issues with the movie, with this particular movie itself, but the scene, it reminded me at least of the scene in Age of Ultron when they're defending that fucking like kill switch in the middle of the and they, all the Avengers are fighting those fucking sentry bots at the same time, and it's just like the slow motion, like just everything coming together, everyone working together in perfect symmetry. It is like this just huge, it's not actually, but it's shot and presented like a big one shot in slow motion. We basically hear the entire Beastie Boys song, which is fucking awesome. Like, I feel like that's the longest amount of time I've heard a song in a movie.
Yeah.
Like, almost ever. I basically just echo everything that you said. It was just awesome.
I had the Suicide Squad like vibes in that scene.
Oh yeah, like, absolutely.
There were, it's been a while, but I felt like there were a couple moments like that in James Gunn's The Suicide Squad, where they were all like working together, doing their own thing in like an extended, almost montage-y, like sure. fight choreographed scene like that. And I was like, okay, I see where you tested that out, and you were like, oh, all right, this works. Now let me really crack my knuckles and go at it.
Yeah, I think that just about wraps it up. Oh, we do need to talk about, okay, there's the fucking almost death scene with Rocket when they finally get the passcode, but it's not working, and he kind of dies. He does. He flatlines, and he's up in some sort of purgatory, afterlife, something, and he meets Lila, and Lila's, you know, she said, hey, I've been flying with my friends. She got to fly with her friends. Rocket got to go fly with his new family. It all kind of worked out. But she's like, hey, I'm here with my friends. And Rocket's like, well, can I come fly with you guys too? And she says, yeah, of course. But then she says, not yet. It's not your time. And then she has the line, there's the hands that made us and the hands that guide the hands. Not sure what that means now, but I think that's going to be significant in the future. I think there's going, I feel like in the MCU, we're just building up and building up and building up. We're eventually get to some higher power, the Living Tribunal, that kind of shit, like the one above all, if anyone knows the comics. That was significant.
Sounds like a God reference to me.
Yes, it absolutely has to be a God reference, because like, I think there has to be some sort of reason that this higher power saved Rocket. Rocket died in this moment, but someone pushed him back. It's not like Lila was up in heaven like, nope, you can't come yet. there was some actual higher power, the hand that guides the hand, that needed Rocket for some bigger issue coming up in the, you know, in the future. So again, we'll talk about it after, pretty much now, but Rocket's going to have a big, he's got to have some sort of big storyline coming up. So again, we'll talk about it. He is now, the Guardians all go on their separate ways. Let's see. Mantis goes to find herself because she's only been doing things for Ego and the Guardians. So now she's leaving to go find what she wants to do. Nebula and Drax are staying on Nowhere to help raise the kids and to run the city. Star-Lord is leaving because he's been running his whole life, so now he's finally going back home to see his grandpa, Jason Quill. Who am I forgetting? Well, and Rocket. Rocket is now the leader of the Guardians, and they'll give him, like, the Ravager salute. And the new Guardians, we find out in the post-credit scene, is Rocket, Mega Groot, Kraglin, Cosmo, Adam Warlock, and Phyla Vell. I don't know if her, Phyla, I guess she's called in this movie, but in the comics, Phyla Vell. So that is our new Guardians in the future, eventually. Although we didn't get the Guardians will return. We got, instead, the legendary Star-Lord will return after a post-credit scene of Peter finding his grandpa. And, well, I guess that happened at the end of the movie. And then the post-credit scene is them just having breakfast and talking about mowing an old lady's lawn while a 41-year-old man watches them do it or something like that. Easter egg, if you read the newspaper that his grandpa's reading, it says Kevin Bacon, or it says alien abduction, Kevin Bacon tells all or something like that. So that's just fun. He's finally getting that off his chest. So yeah, I thought it was very interesting that they set up a new Guardians. Didn't promise that the new Guardians are coming back anytime soon, but they did promise Star-Lord specifically. The legendary Star-Lord will return. Brian, talk to me about all this.
Oh, there's a lot to talk about. First of all, let's get into the disbanding of the Guardians, because I have a lot of thoughts about this scene. As for this movie, and as for this crew and all the behind-the-scenes stuff that we know, this made sense. And the characters, where they went, and what they did, makes sense. As far as bigger picture goes, MCU-wise goes, had a couple of, okay, interesting. How are we gonna retcon that or fix that or tie that up in the future? Moments. I had another thought and now it's gone. I kind of felt the same way that Rocket did in that moment too, of like, hey, we just did this thing to save our family member so that we could all be whole and together again. And immediately they're like, everybody's like, yep, okay, I'm gone, bye. And I was, again, for all the behind the scenes stuff, it's like, I get why that has to happen, but I'm kind of with Rocket where like, hey, whoa, like, you just got me back. Like, we're now back together. Like, did you see that hallway scene? We fucking kick ass. Did you see how we saved all those people? We fucking kick ass. Now we're going to be like, bye, see ya. Like, and again, it's because all these actors are like, yeah, we're done, we're leaving, which I get. And I understand that we could and should maybe send some of these characters off in different directions. Some of the choices are a head scratcher for me. Why Mantis had to leave? I get why she's like, I have to find out who I am for myself. It's like, okay, I get that, but is that because Palm Clementif is like, I'm only going to do these movies with James, and now that he's gone, I'm going to now do DC movies with him because I think she's going to be in one of his movies? And so I was like, okay, I get it for that reason, but at the same time, like we talked about, Mantis not really having a whole lot to do in this movie. The one time where she really did have a whole lot to do, I felt, was the holiday special. But even then was like, there's so much more that you can do with this character. I would like to see her come back. I hope she does. She hasn't said if she doesn't want to yet or not. Drax staying with Nebula to be with the kids makes sense for his arc in this movie. But when Dave Bautista's like, yeah, I'm fucking done being Drax. I guess.
Be the same thing as Gamora.
I guess. But that was the one part too where I was like, well, then are we never going to see Nowhere again and Nebula again and all that because Dave Bautista is now going to be gone? Like, I almost wish that he would have left on his own like Nebula did.
And but where is like, he going? What's his purpose?
To find a fan, like his family, like to be like, yeah, I've got this family here, but we're all leaving.
What so family now, is he going to find? His family's right there. He now has a purpose to be a dad. His family died.
Yeah, but to raise those kids, yeah. Which, again, like I said, makes sense for this movie. But as far as the character in the future goes, until you recast him and tell me that we're going to see Drax again, or you fucking park 5 dump trucks full of cash in front of Dave Bautista's house and you say, hey, we need you to be to make an appearance in Secret Wars. Like, okay. But at this point is what I'm saying, where it's like, it's beautiful for this movie, but big picture wise, how is this now going to work?
Well, Brian, let me tell you. No, I have theories. First of all, on your Guardians thing, yes, they're working together now. They're almost a perfect faction. And that's why they have to break up, Brian, because the Guardians of the Galaxy are not perfect. I just spent 2 hours telling you this.
James Gunn's Guardians aren't.
The Guardians themselves are always this ragtag group of any version of the Guardians that you can look at in the comics, I don't think is ever... I mean, sure, eventually they reach, you know, they're together enough and they have the chemistry and they're this great group. But like always the essence of the Guardians is this ragtag group of people. Now that they're all like perfect and on the same page, they don't need to be a team. But, you know, Star-Lord needs to go figure out the reason that they're all fucked up is because they all have issues. Right now that they're so good, they still need to go figure out a lot of these issues. Peter needs to go back to his family. But that one made so much sense to me. Mantis. The reasoning behind it, she's only been following Ego and then she's only been doing things for the Guardians. Yes, go and figure out what you want to do with your life. If you figure out that you want to fight with the Guardians, come back. Rocket will obviously bring her back in. I think that she genuinely will play a big role. I don't think we mentioned this at all, but there was the scene where they all were attacked by the Abelisks, but then she basically realized, oh, they're not going to eat us because they only eat batteries. So then they basically tame them and they're riding them around. She leaves with the Abelisks. If you remember Guardians 2, the Abelisks are multi-dimensional traveling beasts. So she now has that power, which, again, side tangent, I believe Herbert Windom was experimenting on them, and he himself potentially now has the capability of multi-dimensional travel, and that's how he escaped the exploding ship. That's my theory.
As much as I loved him, I don't want him back. Like...
I'm just saying.
He anyway. Served his purpose in this movie. He was a big enough piece of shit where if we do see him again, I hope it's just so that Rocket can finally put the barrel to his head and fucking end it. Because
no, Rocket won't kill him.
I don't want to see it any other way. I don't want to see him back in any other way.
Anyway, like, back to Mantis. I don't know if she'll have a solo movie, but I think she will have a role to play.
And I see her coming back. In fact, yes. Now that we know that Star-Lord's coming back in some way, shape, correct, or form, I could see if it's a show, which I could see it being a show. I could see Star-Lord having a show more than a movie at this point. So if it's a show, which I think it is, I could see Mantis showing up for an episode.
But I honestly, I think she's going to have things to do outside of the Guardians. I don't think she needs to come back in a Star-Lord thing. I don't think she needs to come back with Guardians Volume 4 or whatever the new, what they're going to do. I think she can have, I don't know, again, I don't know if she'll have a solo movie or anything like that, but I think she will have a new role to play in the MCU. I genuinely believe that. I hear that she, her character is very interesting in the comics. They go down a bunch of different avenues. I know nothing about that. I just think that there is room for story with her outside of the Guardians. What else did you have a problem with that I need to?
I can see Mantis coming back too. I was more or less just saying, like, in the moment, like, I had a lot of conflicting feelings of like, I like this, but I don't like this. Sure. But, and again, if Dave Bautista wouldn't have said, yeah, I'm fucking done because of A, B, C, D through M, then I would, and if Zoe Saldana would have been like, wouldn't have said, yeah, this is my last one, I'm done. And if most of them hadn't given off the vibe of, yeah, I'm not really interested in coming back without James Gunn, then maybe I would have felt differently in that moment. Maybe then I would have been like, there's a chance we could see them all again. And there is still that chance out there that we can see them all again.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, it's like the way that they went off, like, I wish some would have been tweaked slightly. Again, like I said, I don't have
Brian thinks he's a better story writer than James Gunn. You heard it here, folks.
No, that's not what I said. What I did say, though, was I had a lot of nitpicky things about this movie. Not a lot of big problems. A lot of very tiny, minuscule, nitpicky things that in time I'm sure I can get past. But for right now, after tiny one viewing...
Things, just fix the ending. Just do the ending different. It's just the tiny thing.
Not what I was saying. That's not how I was saying it either. New Guardians is also interesting because I can see most of those characters like coming back and doing a show, or, you know, showing up in Secret Wars, or maybe they come in to the third act of Kang Dynasty to try to help save the day, and then we get the ending that brings us into Secret Wars. So like I can see them coming back, but not all of those characters how we've seen them. Because if I could see anybody not coming back without James Gunn, it's Sean Gunn. So the fact that Kraglin's on the team, it's like, huh, that's an interesting choice. Granted, his character didn't get a lot to do in anything so far. Like, anything. We talked about his arc in this movie being like that cute, fun little bit that he got to do. He's never really, like, he's been on the team, but he's never really been the team. You know what I mean? Like, he's never really been a part of the team. He's kind of like, he's basically been on the bench the whole time. Like, he can go out in the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter when the game's already done and do his thing for like a play, and then he's back to the bench. Like, and so I can't see him coming back without James Gunn. So I can see them talking him out, maybe bringing in somebody else. The girl that you mentioned, I don't remember what her name is. I know nothing about her. I was just like, oh, cool. Yeah. Like, he recruited one of those kids, and now they're like,
was the one that High Evolutionary was watching go around the circle. And she, I think she was the one directly talking with Drax. Like, she was kind of like the main child.
So, like, I was like, oh, cool. We're bringing some of these kids in now, and we can have new characters. I like Cosmo being on the team. I want to see more out of Cosmo. I already expressed my love for fucking Oak Tree Groot. and then Rocket. Like I said, I'm glad that he's going to be sticking around in some way, shape, or form. What's interesting is in that like clump of Twitter questions that I told you about that I saw, I think it was IGN that like compiled them all together in like a nice little graphic where it was like 50 different questions that he answered, and like you could read through. One of them asked if he was told or directed by Kevin Feige or Marvel on which Guardians to have in the post-credit scene as the new Guardians, and if he had any notes from them, and if it was their decision to have a new team or his decision. And he basically said all of that was his decision. Like, Marvel didn't have any say as far as a new Guardians team went. They didn't tell him which characters to throw on there. He put them all in there. So that's interesting, because like you said, it leaves the door cracked open for a potential of a new Guardians. And I think if you do a movie or a show with this team, or a new Guardians team, you call it the new Guardians.
Yeah,
kind of like how in the comics there's the Avengers, there's the Mighty Avengers, and there was also a new Avengers. And yeah, it was a lot of like newer characters on those teams.
I think there's a strong potential that we don't ever see them. And you know what? That's honestly okay, because James Gunn, like, you know, if he had no direction to put them in, that means he put them in because he thought it was absolutely like necessary for Rocket's story. He is now leading the Guardians, and he just wanted to show that this is like, you know, that it's that final episode of Parks and Rec where they show everyone in the future. We don't need to see any of their other stories because this is kind of where their story ends. They'd go and do a bunch of other stuff anyway, but this is the story that we're telling. This is how it ends, and we may never see them again. You know, we, knowing Marvel, they'll except probably call them back. Probably see them again.
And except for, let's get into that post-credit scene.
Star-Lord!
The return of the legendary Star-Lord. I'm going to bring in the background, like the behind-the-scenes information into this too. And I talked about how the majority of the cast have spoken out in interviews saying like, yeah, I don't see myself coming back without James Gunn, or it'd be weird to come back and do a Guardians without James Gunn, yada, yada, yada. The only person that didn't say that, though, was Chris Pratt. And in an interview the day that I went to see the movie, where I was like, huh, that's interesting, where he started off by saying, yeah, I think it'd be kind of weird to do to continue doing Star-Lord and do Star-Lord again without James Gunn and his direction of the character and all that. But he also said, I would be open to coming back. He's like, I feel like there's a lot more potential and a lot more things that you could do with this character. And there's a lot more interesting things that I would be open to discovering with this character. And I think I would be open to coming back to do Star-Lord. And then, like, fucking hours later, then I see the legendary Star-Lord will return. And I'm like, huh, how convenient that he happened to say that today. Or I heard him say that today. And then, lo and behold, that scene is weird. It feels very random. It feels almost too mundane, too ordinary. And just, like, the pace and just everything about that scene was weird to me. And by weird, I mean, like, I feel like there's something big hidden in that scene where, like, I'm compelled to, like, study that scene, like, almost frame for frame and word for word and figure out, like, what the fuck's going on in that scene. Cause it was just too, like, just a snippet of, like, awkward ordinary, where I was like, what's the point of this other than to tell us that Star-Lord's gonna be back? I was trying to fucking read that newspaper quick too, to be like, is there something hidden in that newspaper, while also trying to listen to what they were saying to be like, wait, what is going on with that dude? There was a theory that I heard today that I was like, huh, that would be interesting. Somebody made a theory today in one of my podcasts that I was listening to, that maybe Star-Lord could show up in Secret Invasion. Because you got the Skrulls. So you got your outer space, outer planetary stuff that's being brought back into here. The fact that they're talking about this random guy that's watching them, that's this 40-year-old dude that's like staring at them.
Mm.
Maybe it's a Skrull that recognizes the legendary Star-Lord.
Maybe his grandpa's a Skrull.
There, I'm just saying, we got
Peter thought his grandpa was dead. Maybe. Oh.
We got a show about shape-shifting aliens.
Yep.
Yeah, it's plausible that you could see Star-Lord in it.
I just want to throw, I think he's coming back. I think Chris Pratt's coming back.
For sure.
I said, why not? If you're him, like you look at someone like Zoe Saldana, who says that she's tied up too much in these franchises, which I completely understand. You want to go do more different, diverse projects. You look at someone like Chris Pratt, who's done a lot of that kind of stuff. And I feel like he's fine staying in this franchise and just bringing in those paychecks. To each their own. My one other thought that came across, it was like almost my first thought when I saw it, was you're right, that scene was a little mundane, and maybe Peter Quill is done being Star-Lord, and maybe that Star-Lord mantle potentially gets passed along. I'm not sure how they would do that. I haven't quite, there hasn't been much thought past that, but that was my initial thought. I was like, the way they worded it was not Peter Quill will return, it was the legendary Star-Lord will return. So there was that part of me that immediately thought, is there a way that they can pass along the mantle and someone else is now Star-Lord? I don't know. Just throwing that out there, as if it comes right, I want my credit.
I heard some people too be like, oh, this is a way to get him on the Avengers, which is
he could become a.
It's plausible too, because in the comics, there were lots of Guardians that came to Earth and stayed on Earth for a while and were part of the Avengers. Fuck. Tony Stark was a Guardian of the Galaxy for a while. Like, so there were Avengers that also joined the Guardians of the Galaxy. Of course, that also happened after the first Guardians movie. So, hey, let's take our most popular MCU character and throw him on one of our most popular teams now, being the Guardians and being Iron Man. But yeah, his suit was cool. Like it had like a sun like design on it, like on the chest and the helmet and stuff. Like, I don't know. It was pretty cool. I dabbled in that series, but I didn't fully read it. But I was like, oh, cool. Like, Tony Stark's off in space doing Guardian shit. All right.
Awesome. Final thoughts, Brian.
It's a great movie. Definitely one of the best Marvel movies since Endgame. I don't think I'd rate it above No Way Home. That movie still just hits a special place for me. But, like, I would put it after No Way Home as far as, like, post-Endgame MCU stuff. And I heard a lot of people talk about how it was, like, this movie was almost, like, comfort food in the sense that, like, this felt like a classic Marvel movie. Like, I know we're introducing a lot of new concepts, a lot of new characters, a lot of new ways to tell these stories, and like the Disney Plus shows, and even some of the movies can feel like we're trying to world build more than just tell a story. And I liked the fact that this movie was as self-contained as it was, and it was like, this is the story we're going to tell with these characters. We don't give a fuck what's going on in the rest of the MCU, and we're going to focus on the characters and their journeys. And I kind of hope that Marvel goes back to that, because this movie definitely made me realize that, like, maybe I am feeling that too. But yeah, it's a great movie. I loved it. I will most definitely be buying it when it's out on 4K, and I will be trying to see it again this weekend because I had such a good time with it.
It is now one of my new favorite MCU movies. To me, it's the best since Endgame. It is at least top 10 in my MCU ranking. It might be top 5. I love this movie to death. I think the ending was perfect.
I've heard some people say that this made them re-fall in love with Marvel, and that they're going to go back and start watching some of these projects over the, you know, like Phase 4, that kind of stuff. I haven't fallen out of Marvel like a lot of people have. I see the issues that people voice, but to me, this was just like a reaffirming Marvel's still here. They still have their fastball. Yes, this was James Gunn, so maybe, you know, people might give it that, but I still think Marvel has what they used to have. They still can pull it out, and they still will. So this was just a reaffirmation for me. It's honestly, like I said, one of my favorites. Literally that one nitpick, that was the biggest one about his helmet. I saw it, New Rockstars put a video titled Why He Didn't Use It, and it's 17 minutes long, so I'm going to be watching that immediately after we record. Because I need to know. Maybe they have a good explanation. Again, most of the issues with this movie are easily explainable. And that's okay to have in movies. That is okay. That's what me and you are here to talk about. We can talk about all those nitpicks. But at the end of the day, we still love the movie. We still enjoy it. There's things. If there's a big plot hole, that's a problem. Like this, potentially, this mask thing. I don't know. That one feels big enough where it could be an actual issue. But everything else was just kind of, like you said, nitpicking. So I absolutely love this movie. We need to wrap this up. Go ahead.
We're going to skip best off because this episode's already going on like 3 hours. So we'll do best off. We'll double down on best off next week. I will go into detail on mine next week, but all I'll say is if you're looking for more Guardians, definitely look into the current ongoing Guardians of the Galaxy series in the comics right now. Issue number one came out literally weeks before Guardians came out, and it's a epic sci-fi Western, and it's pretty great. So first issue is out. It's pretty great. Issue number two should be coming out relatively soon. I'll go into more detail next week, but that was going to be my best stuff. Do you want to share what yours was going to be?
No, I'll save mine. I'll leave the people wanting. It's a movie that Brian wants me to watch, and he's mentioned it. I think he's mentioned it on the podcast. We'll talk about that next week.
Oh, goodness. It could be anything. I just wanted to mention mine because it was related to the Guardians, and with only one issue being out, it's a perfect jumping on point. So, yeah. We have Ben, your Midwesterners. That's MIDWESTERNERDS. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Midwestern Nerds. We are the Midwestern Nerds podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send that to MidwesternNerds@gmail.com. You can find and stream and listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please remember to rate and review, share and subscribe, be kind, please rewind. All of these things help this podcast to continue to improve and grow and be the Midwestern Nerds podcast that you, the listener, want to listen to. Next week, we will be back with another exciting episode. Cannot promise it won't be shorter than this one because we have lots of things that we're passionate that we love talking about. And I'm sure we'll have another great discussion about something in the nerdy culture next week. For your Midwestern Nerds, I have been Brian Stoffel.
And I've been K.O. Kyle Olson.
And whether it's beer, brats, comics, or missing masks and rocket boots,
keep it nerdy.